Welcome to Red Ice Radio, independent, alternative, new right radio with headquarters in Northern Europe and North America. Thank you for being here. I'm Henrik Palmgren from Sweden, and the website is redicecreations.com. That's R-E-D-I-C-E, redicecreations.com. And we also have redicecreations.net and redicemembers.com. Well, as you know, if you're a regular listener, we do interviews with people who offer us a position that we do not get to hear in the mainstream media, or at the very least, not represented accurately. Well, we do programs with a lot of different people, and we do not always agree with what everyone has to say or all of their conclusions. But disclaimers to the side, we do the job that the media doesn't do. We actually let people speak and let them have their positions heard. You know, the mainstream media is to a large extent, not entirely, but to a large extent, controlled. Some things here and there occasionally slip through. But in these times, it is regulated, highly regulated, which makes it extremely contrived. It is pretty much incapable of offering you a different opinion. They are unable to uphold the proud tradition of free speech that we've had in the West, a tradition of debating and hearing many different sides, including those we do not agree with. All that is left now is strangling political correctness, speech codes, and even behavioral protocols. Therefore, mainstream media is truly a dying institution. So we offer you something here that they would never do. This is the new media. Having said that, at this time, due to the urgency of the problems that the West finds itself in, and we, Europeans as a people, we are uncompromising in representing and hearing our own perspectives, as most of our detractors get their voices heard and represented in the mainstream media these days. You could say we moved from trying to hear as many different positions as possible to simply taking our own side, something that we Europeans have become very bad at doing. Simply taking our own side. And that doesn't mean that we are against everyone else or have a desire to dominate others or hold them down, as some claim. This is just a misrepresentation in order to continue to discredit our positions. So folks, today we are going to speak with Dr. David Duke. He was recently on the Alex Jones show for a very enlightening program, offering us a perspective that we never hear on Alex's show. As you might know, the media have been charging David for years as being this grandeur hater, this monster due to his past as a young man in the Ku Klux Klan. Now, having spoken with David, I must disagree with the media's portrayal, and this alone should itself initiate curiosity. He has, in fact, moved on to become someone who stands up for the rights of all people, but especially for the rights of European people, something we desperately need in these times as we are discriminated against like no other group or no other race. Anything can be said, and it's being said about us currently. Anything goes when it comes to criticizing us without any kind of repercussions. There is even people who openly talk about replacing us, removing us, in some cases, even killing us. But their cushy university positions or the government support that they or their organization receive have not been threatened at all. No consequences. Now, a simple way to demonstrate or test this fact is simply just to swap out the group being criticized, whites or Europeans, whatever term they use, to another group. And you'll soon realize that that would never fly. So I wanted to bring David Duke on the program to talk more about his work, the current crisis in Europe, and how he views many of the problems we face. I'm sure you're familiar with David already, but if you're not and want to hear more about his past, I urge you to listen to the interview that Lana did with Dr. Duke about a month ago on Radio 314. I'm sure you heard the program, but if not, they did speak about his past in the beginning of the program. So we'll skip the portion, as we've already covered that, as I want to spend as much time as I can on more pressing issues and current events. So let's get started. Welcome, Dr. Duke. Thank you so much for coming on the program with us. It's great to have you here. I hope you're doing well today.
Well, I'm doing fine, and it's my pleasure. I think Red Ice Radio and your work is just fantastic, and I recommend it to people all over the world, and you're cutting edge, and we need that. If our people are going to survive, and we're going to have a world of a bit more peace and opportunity and beauty, we have to save our people. That's the bottom line.
Well, thank you so much for that, David. And Yep, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is the edge. This is where it's at. And of course, today we're going to get into some of these topics. I think most of our audience is familiar with you. They probably heard you, well, either from one of your detractors on the mainstream media, or they've actually heard from you themselves. And of course, we can refer to an interview that you did with Lana here on 314 just a few weeks ago in terms of an introduction, because we have a lot to squeeze in our 2 hours here today. So I just kind of wanted to start and dive into some of the topics that we have lined up here right away. But first off, I really wanted to ask you more about this migration crisis, or immigration crisis, as they call it. It's really an invasion of Europe. That's what it is. It's an unprecedented movement of people now that is going to lead to the displacement of the Europeans. It's just happening at an incredible rate. But let's talk a bit about what you see is happening here, where this will lead if it continues unchecked, demographically speaking, and then we can get into a bit what you think is driving this in the first place, David.
Well, let's just start, you know, what we're facing here. And I really believe that we've got to speak strongly and very straight about what's happening and what we're really facing, what Europe is facing, what the United States is facing, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. We're facing annihilation, literal annihilation of our expression of life from this planet. We're facing the complete destruction of not only our people and our aesthetic, our values, the way we look, the way we feel, the kinds of societies we create, our culture, our traditions, our values. We are facing literally our genocide. And genocide is a good word, because genocide means the destruction of the genes. And truly, from the genes is what and is where from what flows in terms of culture and heritage and values. And that's what we're facing. It's just very, very simple. This massive immigration into Europe and America is nothing more than our annihilation as a people. And I believe that to genocide or destroy any people, any race, any heritage, any nation, I believe that is the ultimate evil. Now, that may sound strange for a academic to use the word evil, but we must remember that our enemies are constantly referring to us as evil. According to the media, I'm the most evil person on the planet. In fact, I'm very proud of the fact you mentioned, you know, my work, and now the media attacks me incessantly. I'm really very, very proud of the fact that this controlled, genocidal, destructive, corrupt media views me as the ultimate evil, because indeed they are the ultimate evil. Anybody who wants to destroy the beauty of European mankind and who wants to subjugate and destroy every people on the planet, they are the ultimate evil on the planet. And that's what I think this fight is all about. Ultimately, the bottom line is whether or not this earth, this world, this planet, is something that goes forward in an evolutionary sense, in a sense toward a higher mankind and the higher values of mankind, or whether we're going to go into a horrific, a world really of dissolution, murder, war, hatred, degeneracy, destructiveness, a world controlled by tyrants, a world in which the highest values of humanity are destroyed, and the lowest elements of humanity are elevated.
Well, exactly. You're absolutely right. Now, how would you explain that this, what we're talking about here initially, is genocide for a person that only sees that, you know, this is about helping other people, we're doing the right thing? I mean, thank God the Eastern Europeans are a bit more balanced about this. They seem to have some sense about them when it comes to what is happening. We've seen Hungary react strongly, even Croatia as well, and some other countries, Poland. But in Western Europe, we have basically people out on the streets demanding more immigrants to come into their lands, right?
Well, they are, but you have to understand that the establishment of Europe and America is a controlled establishment. It is an establishment, ultimately, that its very roots is not European, by a people who don't identify themselves as Europeans. as a people whose literature is full of vicious hatred toward the European people. Europeans are presented as, you know, bigots, haters, racist. In fact, racist is the ultimate R word. I guess it's the ultimate epithet in the world today, when the truth is that the real racists of this planet, the Jewish supremacists, and that's just a very frank way to put it, are the ultimate supremacists on the planet. Europeans, I'm certain, I've been around a long time now, and I've worked with European patriots all over the world. I've never met any Europeans or European Americans who are supremacists, who are seeking European hegemony over every other people, or who are trying to exploit other people or enslave other people. What we are basically are people that want to preserve our own heritage, as every people on the planet want to do. But the narrative and the psychology and the associative conditioning, the psychology, is controlled by people who are the ultimate racist, because they're trying to paint us as this incredible evil force. It is true, Europeans in colonialism, and Europeans had expansive states, and Europeans had what's called imperialism. In fact, that's kind of been the history of the world in a real sense. We've had tribes trying to expand their influence over other tribes, conquer other tribes. Individual people in those tribes or the governments of those tribes have tried to influence or gain power over others in great empires. We've seen that throughout the history of the world. But Europeans certainly are not unique in this. Genghis Khan wasn't a European, but he certainly invaded Europe.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We can go on and on. Islamics, Muslims sought to increase their, what you call imperialism, into the European world, and they did invade the European world. They enslaved millions of people. They killed countless numbers of people, as did, I must say, Europeans against them as well. But even the Crusades, which is something used as a means to demonize Europeans, racistly demonize Europeans, were actually more of a response to earlier invasions of Europe,
right,
such as the Moorish invasions of Spain, what the Ottoman Empire did, for instance, and many other invasions that existed in Europe from the Middle East historically that preceded the so-called Crusades. So the truth is that every people on the earth have a right to live, have a right to preserve their culture. But the unique thing is, and again, it makes no rational sense because the media is not pursuing this thing in a rational way. It's doing it in an emotional, associative conditioning way. For instance, the image in the recent crisis that we have in Europe is this image of a little baby being washed up on the beach, and how that that if Europeans want to preserve their heritage, then they're baby killers, and they're not looking at the people who are trying to come into Europe and endangering their children by putting their kids on these leaky boats and endangering them. The person that really killed his wife and child were not Europeans. It was, in fact, the father who put his wife and child on this incredibly dangerous boat and caused ultimately the drowning of his loved ones.
Yeah, very irresponsible. Very
and
irresponsible.
He wasn't even coming for a freedom. He apparently had some money, by the way. He was coming because he could get free dental care in Europe. That is the height of insanity, that he would cause the death of his child and his wife to do that. But it's images. You see, it's the images of this child, and it's the narrative associated with the images that have really been our downfall. And what we must understand is that the global media, and even though Europe doesn't have the same kind of overwhelming power that exists in America, it's the same Hollywood media. It's the same international media conglomerates. They're the ones who've poisoned our people to believe that simply preserving our way of life, our beautiful European way of life, these harmonious and beautiful communities that have existed for literally thousands of years, that somehow the destruction of these communities, for these, for this unique expression of humanity, that this is somehow moral. And yet, if you turn it around and you had European mass, say you had European mass immigration that was going to wipe out the Amazonian Indians. And of course, they're always talking about European colonialism and how this was, you know, very evil thing in terms of indigenous peoples. But somehow the mass invasion of Europe, that is somehow a moral thing. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any moral sense, any rational sense. But that's not how this revolution, that's not how this genocide is being constructed in the minds and the hearts of people. So that's the fundamentally bottom line of this whole process, is this is an orchestrated process to destroy an ancient enemy of those who truly control the global media in the world. And even those Gentiles who are collaborators with this issue, even their self-hate, so to speak, is not something that came out of our people as a natural phenomena. It was instilled in our people by a poisoning process that's been going on for over 100 years now.
Well, it truly is kind of a Hollywood morality here. And as you say, there's an endless string of double standards, incredible hypocrisy. Why are not the Gulf states taking in any of these migrants? Why are Israel not taking them in? Why are they, in fact, sending those who try to get into Israel up to, they're paying people to go up to Sweden and stay there permanently, not go back to Israel, for example. I mean, the fact is that there is historical precedence for this kind of migration. And the fact is that the people here is being used as a weapon, really. It really isn't about, because if they cared about this, David, then these wars that we're seeing in the Middle East that is driving, not all, but a lot of this, that wouldn't be happening to begin with, right?
Well, maybe that's a good place to start. Let's talk about why we have this refugee crisis to begin with, and quote, the European response to the refugee crisis. I think we should talk about that. Why don't we begin by talking about the current crisis and what has preceded this crisis? Mm-hmm. What is the source of this so-called crisis in Syria that's causing these massive Syrian refugees? And by the way, in the name of what's happening to the Syrians, there, many of these refugees come in aren't even Syrians.
Exactly. That's just right.
If you take a look at the people and you start looking at the identity of the people coming in, probably most of them aren't even Syrian to begin with.
Yeah.
What's the source of this? And of course, and this is pretty obvious. This is not something that is really debatable. I mean, this is factual material. Years ago, the Zionists, who, by the way, who dominate the same globalist media that have let Israel get away with murder, so to speak, and massive ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people, 600,000 people who have invaded Lebanon and killed at least 40,000 people there, both Christians and Muslims, they have looked at Syria as the enemy of their greater Israel, of their Zionist dream. And Syria was one of the few countries in the world. By the way, I've been to Syria, and I can speak pretty authoritatively about it because I visited Syria. In fact, I visited government leaders. I visited the main Christian figurehead of the country, the great patriarch of Christianity in Syria, which is about 2 to 3 million people, by the way. I also visited with the leading Sunni Muslim leader, the Grand Mufti of Syria, which is a traditional position there. And both these men were in total support of the Syrian government. In fact, the Syrian government was a secular government. So all these people who tell us that, well, we have a great threat from Islamic radicalism, how in the world then would we support a very fine government of Syria, which had probably one of the most advanced educational systems? They had a great deal of peace in the country, even though they had many sources of conflict, because multiculturalism, multiracialism ultimately is a source of conflict. The United Nations showed that 80% of the civil wars around the world are based on ethnicity and on religious differences. And the government was so bent over backward to being inclusionary of all the different groups. There's no government in the world that's been like Syria, really. Israel's not that way. There's no, even though Palestinians are about 20% or 24% of the population of Israel, there are no Palestinian cabinet members in Israel. And Israel is a devoted Jewish country, and it's constantly said that it has a right to be Jewish. In fact, we have media around the world talking about the demographic threat to Israel. And yet, if you look at the actual figures, which the Israeli government publishes, Israel proper itself is becoming more and more Jewish. The Jewish percentage of the population is increasing, and the non-Jewish population is decreasing. And yet they talk about demographic danger. But if there's a demographic danger to Europe, or Israel, I should say, then why is not a demographic danger to Europe something that's legitimate? Mm-hmm. So let's go to Syria first. In Syria, we had a government that was very supportive of Iran, very supportive of Hezbollah in Lebanon. And Hezbollah, by the way, is not only supported by Muslims in Lebanon, it is massively supported by Christians. And I can prove this. The Christian Science Monitor, a leading publication in the United States, talks about this at depth, that there's no party in Lebanon that's more supported by the Christian minority in the country than is Hezbollah, because they've been responsible. Hezbollah literally is not a entity that promotes Sharia law. It literally promotes secular government openly in Lebanon. That's Hezbollah. Mm. Same thing is true of Syria. So what in the world, why in the world would the West or Western countries, the EU and America, support the destruction of a secular government, a Western educated doctor and his wife, a man who included in his cabinet both Shia and both Sunni, Christians and Muslims, that was one of the most peaceful nations of the world? When I went to Syria, I went to the parliament there. I was invited to the parliament, and I was kind of shocked. This was 5 years ago, before all this, the so-called war began, this so-called civil war, which wasn't. It was an invasion of Syria. And there was not a metal detector in sight. That's how peaceful the country was. I walked all over the streets of Damascus and Aleppo and all over the country. And their crime rates were extremely low, one of the lowest in the Middle East. Their educational system was one of the best. Their medical system was very good. They didn't have the prosperity of Europe, but they were way ahead of their other Middle Eastern counterparts. It was a magnificent society. And everybody who's been to Syria knows that, just as Lebanon was, by the way. It was called Beirut was called the Paris of the Middle East before the Zionist invasions of the country and the support of the Zionists to cause civil war between the Christian element and the Islamic element, and to exacerbate that poison. Well, this was what happened in Syria, and our American government and the EU as well, not just the influence of the American government. And when I say American government, please understand, it's not the American people. America is a conquered nation. America is a nation that is controlled by Jewish extremists. I mean, they completely dominate our foreign policy. They completely dominate our media. And this government, under their domination, has supported al-Nusra, which is an al-Qaeda offshoot. Now, this is al-Qaeda, the same al-Qaeda that our media says did 9/11 and caused these incredible terrorist attacks against the United States and other countries. Well, our government supported al-Qaeda in Syria by supporting the so-called rebels against Assad. There was never any large element of so-called rebels, which were moderates.
Yeah.
The whole thing has been driven by these jihadists for years. So how in the world could America support these same jihadists in Syria unless the policy of our country was not controlled by the true interests of the American people, but the interests of the Zionist state of Israel, which wanted to see a destructive policy, a civil war, massive bloodshed, and weakening of Syria because they saw Syria as a critical part of those who opposed the Zionist crimes against the Palestinians and the Lebanese and themselves, by the way, in the Middle East. So how does one make sense of this? And how today, why in the world are there people in the EU and America saying that we have to bomb, and the French are saying this, and a lot of the Americans, but again, it's the French under Zionist domination and influence, when the truth is the only people fighting this truly horrific, cruel, murderous, barbaric ISIS, the only people fighting them are the Syrians. And if the Syrian government goes down and ISIS is able to control all of Syria, which is exactly what would happen if the Assad government was overthrown, that would also lead to even more of their power in Iraq and the rest of the Middle East. But I think the Zionists don't mind that. They like it. And by the way, if you look at the terrorism in Europe and America, it's not people who are supporting Hezbollah. It's not people who are supporting Assad. It's not people who are supporting Iran. It is entirely people, the same elements that are part of the ones destroying Syria. And this is what's led to the refugees. So the refugee problem itself was created by Israel. And what you said was so good there, by the way, when you talked about Netanyahu, and this really shows the power they have over the mind of Europe and America. Here's Netanyahu, who has helped create, and the whole Jewish international Zionist cabal, that's the right way to put it, created this whole humanitarian crisis and causing hundreds of thousands of people to die and whole cities to be destroyed. It is, in fact, Israel that created this, an international Jewish power, globalist power. But the same government, right, has said publicly, Netanyahu came public and he said, well, we're not going to take a single refugee because Israel is a small country. We only have 8 million people. Israel doesn't have the resources to support the refugees. And this is the same Netanyahu who said 4 months ago that he wanted all the Jews of Europe to come to Israel, and how that they have been providing for this. They have put aside money to accept massive numbers of Jews into Israel. So is the issue that Israel is a small country, or is the fact that Israel is a Jewish racial state? Now, the fact that he's doing this is indicative of the real power in the West, because why has the media, the international media, including the media in EU, the media in America, the media all over the Western world, why have they not called out Netanyahu on this and shown how this is a complete and total lie, that the reason they don't take refugees is because they are Jewish supremacists. They are Jewish tribalists who want a Jewish nation. At the same time, when every major Jewish establishment organization in the EU, in Canada, in America, in Australia, in New Zealand, and across Europe, I can just show you individual countries in France, in Germany, in Italy, in the UK, even in Russia, every major Jewish establishment organization favors opening the gates and supporting this immigration into Europe. And it's the same establishment, right, that supports Netanyahu, the same establishment and the same Zio-controlled media that doesn't point out the hypocrisy of Netanyahu. That's pretty telling, isn't it?
Yeah, sure is.
I mean, this is so devastating. It's so shocking when you begin to consider all this. It's almost mind-boggling, isn't it?
It is. Let me play Wesley Clark here.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the Joint Staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, "No." He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq. Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to al-Qaeda? He said, no, no. He says, there's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq. He said, I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments. And he said, I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail. So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, are we still going to war with Iraq? And he said, oh, it's worse than that. He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today. And he said, this is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years, starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran.
How about that? Isn't that incredible? I mean, they're a little bit behind here on the time scale, but this is practically what is happening right now.
Well, yeah, too. And let's be real clear on this. Wesley Clark has Jewish descent,
yeah,
by the way.
Born Kahne, I think his last name was. He changed it to Clark.
And you notice that he knows why we were going in Iraq. It's because at that point, you can look at the media, you can look at the position of Israel on Iraq. Iraq was absolutely supporting the Palestinians. Iraq was, in fact, at that point, supporting Palestinian families who were being destroyed by Israel. And Iraq had been built up to a military power by us because at one point, Iraq was, again, this divide and conquer strategy against Iran. Saddam Hussein was never an enemy of ours. In fact, he probably had one of the more moderate states. It was a secular government in a real sense, obviously, wasn't Sharia law. They weren't radicals. There was no radicals sent by Saddam Hussein into Europe to commit terrorism, even though the media was suggesting that. It was entirely for one reason, and he mentioned Wolfowitz. Wolfowitz and Pearl and the other neocons, we call them neo-Cohens, had long time decided that Iraq, you know, had to go. They were a military force, and they didn't want that military force ultimately to basically support countries like Syria, and they saw that danger on the horizon, Syria and Iran and all that. In fact, obviously they're enemies of Iran, but it was totally done from the interest of Israel. And here's Wesley Clark, right, who is a Jewish guy. He knows why. He says he doesn't know why we went into Iran. We went into Iran because it was part of the Jewish plan. In fact, by the way, Richard Pearl and Wolfowitz and others had a big role in writing a paper called A Clean Break. Very famous
yep.
paper. It's a strategy for rearranging the Middle East. Of these countries are mentioned, by the way, in that paper. And this paper was written for Netanyahu and the Israeli government, talking about how that we had to go to war against Iraq, against Syria, against Lebanon, against Iran, against Hezbollah, all these countries in support, you know, of Jewish power and the Jewish vision of a new Middle Eastern world. That's the reality of it. And by the way, I've got to give you one more quote by Wesley Clark. And you might have this quote.
Oh,
I don't
yeah.
know if you have it.
I think
not.
I know which one you're referring to. Go ahead.
One that kind of illustrates the whole process. Even though he has been supportive of Israel, entirely supportive of Israel, and in fact, supportive of these Israeli wars, here's what he said about Europe. Quote, now this is head of, by the way, NATO. And this is the retired general who commanded the Operation Allied Force in the Kosovo War, by the way, which was a destruction of European values in Serbia, a guy that was head of NATO, basically. And he said, quote, there's no place in modern Europe for ethnically pure states.
Yeah,
that's a 19th right. century idea, and we're trying to transition into the 21st century, and we're going to do it with multi-ethnic states. Now, that's the same guy you just quoted.
Yeah, I know. But it's only happening in European countries, though, so, you know. But the fact is that what happened there in the Balkans, some people have pointed out that might be a micro version of what might happen on a larger scale in Europe. I don't want to jump ahead too quickly and get too far ahead of myself here, but the very aspect that due to the increase of migration, this is obviously going to cause chaos in Europe. It already is happening. It's just going to cause more chaos, more conditions of of violence, of ethnic violence, of rape, of all these horrible things that comes with a multicultural society like this. But that aspect in itself is going to spawn a reaction in the European population that potentially later other nations is going to rise up against, just in the same way that they rose up against, you know, Serbia and what happened in the Balkans, where they turned, where NATO turned on the Christians, right?
Oh, but the here's the danger. You're right. It is going to cause an ethnic revolt. I mean, Europeans are going to realize that everything they care about, their families, their children's future, their values, these magnificent European societies and villages and cities and towns and creations are literally being wiped off. We are being ethnically cleansed in Europe, ethnically cleansed in the entire Western world. And by the way, that's all planned as well for Eastern Europe. You said Eastern Europe's a little more wide, but that's where it's heading. I mean, Eastern Europe is getting the same drumbeat of psychological programming, associative conditioning by the global media as Western Europe. They're a little bit behind us, but isn't that the way it's gone with the so-called conservatives? Conservatives have no meaning at all in the world. They basically, conservatives are people who are for things that are 20 years earlier, you know, it's always the goal is always, the ball is always moving forward into the destruction of everything we believe in. I like that term cuckservative because it really applies.
Yeah.
Cuckold is a beautiful term. It's cuckold is, of course, a derivative of the cuckoo bird and its practice of scouting out the nests of the warbler, another breed of bird. And then waiting for the right moment when the warbler is out of the nest, they sneak in there, they lay their eggs in the nest of the warbler, and these eggs, their offspring of the cuckoo is genetically programmed, by the way, to literally murder, to kill the offspring. The eggs, when the eggs, the way that the cuckoo operates is that it's programmed genetically to hatch earlier than the other eggs in the nest. The cuckoo bird times its delivery of the eggs so that the eggs, so they watch when the warbler lays eggs. Then when the warblers are out foraging for food, they go in there, they lay their eggs. They're genetically programmed to hatch before the warbler's eggs. And then in a horrific scene, you can watch videos of this, the cuckoo chicks break out of their shells, and then they proceed to push and destroy the other offspring of the nest. And then the warblers, not realizing, and they do this by mimicry of the sounds that these chicks make. It's really amazing to see all this. Nature is pretty interesting when you start looking at it. They mimic the sounds, so the warbler are thinking, oh, they're doing good by supporting these this chick, which is actually a cuckoo bird. It grows so big. I mean, it's like a monster, and it's so big that the entire nest is destroyed. This is exactly what's happening to Europe, obviously.
Yeah, it's amazing that this bird does. Why doesn't the bird notice it? You know,
the idea that a European should adopt a child from the third world, that's looked at like, oh, such a wonderful thing, and in reality, what happened is their own offspring are pushed out, right? Their own offspring are destroyed, and their nest, their cities, their culture, their values are destroyed. In fact, that's a really good way to look at it too, because what we're seeing, what's going on here, is really a destruction of everything that we hold dear. So the cuckold is a term derived from the cuckoo, and the cuckold, of course, comes from a very derogatory term for a male. A cuckold is a person who allows his wife, or who does not protect his wife from being raped or sexually conquested or taken by people who are different than their genetics, basically. And then they invest their own work in raising up people who are not them while their beings are destroyed. Humanity has diversity. There's many different kinds of humanity. most liberals believe, oh my God, they celebrate diversity. In fact, they always show the beautiful African family and the beautiful Asian family, and the, you know, and say that every people are beautiful. Every people has this unique identity and culture and language, and we should respect that. And different religions, even, we must respect them all. And yet, for some strange reason, they don't believe that we, as Europeans, should respect even our own offspring and our own lands. The hypocrisy. And I just have to say it this way, the evil of it is just mind-boggling when you really think about it, to support this genocide, the destructive of such beautiful people and a beautiful culture, much in much the same way that the cuckoo bird destroys the nest of the warbler.
Well, you know, I just want to make a brief comment. I want to move on, but people talk about people of color, you know. Red hair and green eyes, brown hair, blue eyes, golden hair and hazel eyes, brown, you know, hair and green. We have all the diversity in the world, all the color in the world within the European race as well. But this is kind of how it's done, isn't it? Everything is just turned upside down. It's almost always a rule that just flip it around 180 degrees and you kind of get the message. It's just it's really a psychological warfare against reason and logic, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's just like the Holocaust, right? Because the Holocaust is committed, it's considered the ultimate crime of human history, and we get more about the Holocaust, in fact, than the genocide of the Second World War, which was also promoted by the same elements. They were the driving force behind the Second World War, which caused the death of 54 million Europeans. Our cities' incalculable artwork caused enormous human suffering. It was the same force, international Zionism, well, not Zionism per se, because Jewish tribalism is expressed in many different forms, but their Jewish Bolshevism killed tens of millions of Europeans, and then later we went to war, Western Europe, went to war, literally, against Europe, allied with the Bolsheviks, who Europe already knew had killed tens of millions of people, and long before there was any allegation against the Germans. We were already going to war against people who already killed tens of millions of Christians. And that really is the source of what's going on right now. This is all a product of this insane war called the Second World War, this was the greatest human rights violation of the planet. And of course, the Germans are given the guilt for this war, when the truth is that whatever the battles between the Germans and the Poles from the Versailles Treaty, and by the way, I don't even blame the Poles for it as well as I don't blame the Germans. The Versailles Treaty was imposed upon both Germany and Poland, and the Germans were trying to allow their own people, like in Danzig, a million Germans to be free. The German nation was cut in half. And a war came because of this. There was a lot of ethnic issues there, too, and a lot of ethnic crimes were being committed. The Jewish element behind Roosevelt and behind a lot of the elements in Great Britain and France, a lot of jingoism that existed, and I must say there was some jingoism among the Germans, too. They tried to create this conflict in Poland into a world war, and they are the ones that made it a global or, in fact, a European war. The Germans tried to avoid that. The Germans asked for peace. They said they just wanted the original borders of 1914. They sent out peace proposal after peace proposal. But that wasn't heard because our media was controlled and because our governments were so influenced by these radical Zionists who demanded this massive war. So what is moral? I mean, the idea of human rights. How many people have been killed in the name of human rights? I'd like, you know, I think more people have been killed in the name of human rights than have ever been killed in the name of conquest.
Yeah, yeah, it's incredible. So these supremacists and the racists that are driving this hateful policy towards the Europeans. I mean, they're quite outspoken about this. This isn't some hidden mystery, really. But they're happy to create these wars in the Middle East because, again, they don't care about those people either. And they're happy to use them to drive these populations into Europe and America because, as we've said, no one else really is taking them in. So we can understand that this is about both creating a greater Israel security for them in the Middle East, taking out the opposition there. But then also, as we said, moving people. And the other part of the equation that I'd like to ask you about is that many people say, you know, well, it's not the immigrants' fault, etc. But although that's true on the level of those who start the war, what's been surprising to me that many of the people that are coming in seem also to have an incredible resentment and almost a hatred for the people that are letting them in. I mean, for the Europeans. I mean, I don't know if you've seen any of the footage. Obviously, the media doesn't show this, but migrants are throwing away food and water. They're booing the police and the guards that are bringing this to them. They have been trashing the places they come to. There are even death threats on camera. And I'm not saying that this is everyone, but there's an awful lot of young, angry men that are coming in here. And I don't see many women and children either who you'd think would leave these countries first and flee from these horrible conditions. So
it's an invasion. There's no question about
exactly.
it. It is an invasion. But again, we have to look at the source. These are the bullets being fired into the heart of Europe and the European people. But you've got to look at who's firing them. And as far as a lot of the hatred of the world, let's just look very frankly at the change that has come about over the last 4 or 5 decades. We have to understand the global media has absolutely created a culture of vicious hatred all over the world against the European people. How many movies, how many programs, how many magazine articles, how many newspaper articles, day after day after day, thousands of articles from our Zio media and our global media have presented European, you know, crimes of colonialism and evil and conquest and murder. I mean, even the movies about the Crusades at one time were looked as like an honorable thing for Europe, but the Crusades are presented like these, you know, evil Europeans who were just doing this because of hatred, when no mention was made of the earlier invasions of Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you've got to understand that the radicalism that exists. And by the way, if the result of this is not because of the media and not result of Jewish policy, well, let me ask the question to those listening, because I want everybody to get a full understanding of this. You must realize that 5 decades ago, just 5 decades ago, and that, by the way, corresponds with the complete Jewish rise over the power of the media, the Western world, the movies, the propaganda, the publications, the newspapers, whatever, of the Western world. And even publications that weren't Jewish were still getting so much of their matter from the same Zionist control. So it's like a critical power. You know, a European today is in danger to go to any Middle Eastern country. If they go to Morocco, if they go to Tripoli today, even more so than under Gaddafi, by the way, and that was because of our policy. Five decades ago, a European could go anywhere in the entire Middle East and not have to worry about getting their head chopped off. I mean, that's the reality. I know many Russians that used to, you know, go vacation in the Middle East. You know, they'd go to the Dead Sea or they'd go to Morocco or Tripoli or whatever. They would go to different parts of the Middle East. So what's changed? I mean, has suddenly the Muslims simply changed because of the basic element of Islam, or is it something else, or is it something that's been driven? Now, the other factor of this is you have to understand the anger they have about the West, because they all know the crimes of the Zionists, and that's put forth as the United States, right? Or the EU, right? They know, I'll give you an example. The EU and America both cooperated in the embargo of Iraq. Now, you can look at Madeleine Albright, our Jewish Secretary of State, this horrid little troll, a Jewish troll. She's on 60 Minutes. And on 60 Minutes, and again, their power is, they have control, but they don't have all control. And sometimes things come out, and this came out. Of course, they never identified the Jewish role in this embargo. But Madeleine Albright's on 60 Minutes, and they ask Madeleine Albright, you know, there's been 500,000 children, according to Western researchers and people from the West that have gone there, 500,000 children who've died because they can't get antibiotics. They even showed films of a little Syrian girl, in fact, a little Iraqi girl, very, very white kids, too, by the way. You ought to see them. They're very European-looking kids. And they're dying. They're choking to death in their own bile because they couldn't get antibiotics. And they had another 500,000 people who died who were elderly and just normal people because they couldn't get antibiotics. They couldn't get decent food. This is a desert kingdom. And this was only because Iraq didn't, you know, support the Jewish narrative, the Zionist narrative with the Palestinians. They were supporting Palestine. And Israel saw them as a competitor. So 60 Minutes asked Madeleine Albright, our Jewish Secretary of State, which is really good and symbolic of who controls America, and the EU too. And they asked her, say, well, what do you think? Is 500,000 children being killed? Do you think this is worth it? Do you think this is, you know, a proper policy? And Madeleine Albright thinks for a second. She pauses. And she says, well, yes, it's a difficult question, but we think it's worth it. 1 million people being killed. Do you any concept? The people of the Middle East, whether they're Iraqis or not, they know these things. You know, they're extremely angry, and the media doesn't present this, by the way, as this is because of the Jews or Israel. In fact, it's very convenient, isn't it, to make America the great Satan. That also takes the pressure off of Israel, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's where a lot of terrorist attacks are going. Europe is the great Satan, right? It's very convenient for Israel to get all these people hating Americans and European peoples rather than the real source. So that's part of it. And the movies are still there, vicious movies. The movies, for instance, even modern movies today. I just saw a movie. I think you saw it as well, maybe a part of a movie, called Erased, which is about an American CIA agent, very blonde, blue-eyed guy. His name is Eckert, I think, is the actor. Same guy that did Thank You for Smoking or something like Thank You for Not Smoking. And he's portrayed as an agent who's in Belgium. And all the people that helped him when he was being unfairly targeted were all immigrants, were all illegal aliens. In fact, he with a van full of illegal aliens, and in the movie, which is done by Jewish Hollywood, by the way, the movie, his daughter, his beautiful daughter, comes, visits him. His wife died of cancer or some sort of a disease. His wife comes to Belgium, and they're trying to kill. So all the white folks, you know, are trying to kill him and wipe out his daughter. The people that help him are illegal immigrants. And at the end of the movie, she kisses a very clearly non-European boy, right? When the message is to the European young women watching, you know, man, you got to bed down a non-European.
Oh yeah.
Those are the good people in the world. Those are the people and this is repeated in thousands of movies again and again,
yes,
and again. So we have to understand. Now, secondly, again, this refugee crisis, the fact that we're in the Middle East, is exactly what's created this massive urge. Now, secondly, they control Europe. So if we really wanted to save the lives of, say, those young kids that drowned, wouldn't the right rational thing to be is for Europe as a unit to say, we're not going to accept a single refugee?
Exactly.
Like Netanyahu did.
Yeah.
Europe itself is one of the most populated, dense countries populated in the world. We are not going to accept any of these refugees. We know that many terrorists can. We're not going to accept a single one. And if this was a clear policy, nobody would go to Europe if they knew they couldn't get there. They wouldn't endure the dangerous passage and all the rest of it if they knew they couldn't get in to begin with.
Of course.
So if we really wanted to save lives of innocent, we would make a clear statement by Europeans and Germans, for instance, today. Merkel, what a sickening commie.
Oh, yeah, I know. And they're calling her a Nazi. Can you believe that? You know.
By the way, this is a woman who was a former communist leader.
Exactly. Yeah.
In Germany, and you notice that's never headlined in their papers. They talk about my Klan involvement when I 40 years ago, and it's headlines, you know. But they don't headline Angela Merkel, former communist.
No, exactly.
But because we have a controlled media, and that's what Europeans must understand. If you don't deal with the force behind all this, you're never going to stop this process. Now, what we should do, I think, in terms of the immigrants, yes, we have to fight them. We have to not let this happen. They cannot come into Europe. And we also, if we have to fight them in the streets to protect ourselves, we've got to fight them in the streets. However, I want you to understand something, that because the media is controlled by the enemy, anytime an individual immigrant is harmed, first off, you're not stopping the problem. The fact is, if a violent act goes on against, say, an innocent kid, or some people are burned up in a fire or whatever, that's used by the Zio media to say that, you see, the Europeans are immoral and those that oppose the immigration are immoral. It's kind of the Anders Breivik case, right?
Yeah,
the people who oppose immigration are people who would shoot down children.
Yep.
Right? So this kind of activity, we have to be very strong, but we have to start to realize the only way we're going to stop the immigration, ultimately, we do need to get out in the streets, but we need to go in the streets and talk about these whores in the government. And that's who we should aim our hatred against, because,
of course, yeah,
battling them will only be used as another term that the Zio media is going to use to destroy and destroy the moral right and moral rectitude of our people to stand up.
Well, I mean, you're right there. I mean, I of course, I mean, I don't want violence. I don't know anybody who does. And although there is a participatory aspect to the fact that, and this could be because people are brainwashed or they believe the lies in the media, they come to the West and then they're programmed with how evil, you know, the Europeans are, and they're against you. They're shutting you down at every instance. They're keeping you out from a job, you know, blah, blah, blah. All those things are going on. Yep. But ultimately, those are the symptoms of something. They're not the cause of it. And I think they'd be very happy to let us fight with each other while the true elite is you know, doing their own thing at the top of the pyramid, and we're going to be too busy fighting with each other on the street level than to find out what real is going on. But
you know, fight the people who control your government, fight the people who control the media. You know, and as far as, yeah, you got to defend your neighborhood, you got to defend your family, obviously.
If it comes to that, sure. Yeah.
No question.
Yeah.
But look, the reason why Europe is being invaded and conquered today is because it's already been conquered. They've already conquered our minds, they've already conquered our spirit, our hearts. That is they have poisoned us already. And it's getting rid of it. The problem is not because of an external invasion force. The problem is because we ourselves have been so deluded and so corrupted and so destroyed internally that we're not allowed to mount a pressure. You know, 50, 60 years ago, I mean, we, you know, from the time, literally, that we expelled the invaders back in the Middle Ages, when we won the battle outside of Vienna, and then we repelled them from Europe, including Greece. We have never really been in danger by any invasion force from the other world. So what's happened is that our gates have been open. And by the way, we have to look. I'm an historian, as you know. I have a PhD in history, and I love history, and I think there's so much to learn from history. What we have going on right now is like a replay of European history of the earlier Islamic invasions. If you read Jewish histories, in my book, Jewish Supremacism and My Awakening, I discuss this at depth. And I read Jewish histories religiously. Well, maybe I shouldn't use that term. But I read them deeply, and I've read a lot of these, and also as Dr. Kevin MacDonald has done it. And in my book, I show from Jewish histories where Jewish histories themselves boast about the Jewish role in overthrowing Christendom in what is now Turkey. They literally talk about the fact that at least five different occasions, the Jewish community in Istanbul, Constantinople is what it was, of course, before the conquest, Jewish community in Istanbul literally opened the gates to the Islamic invaders.
Yeah.
Now, there's no argument about this fact. This is Jewish history where they talk about this in their own histories of the region. This exact process took place in the Balkans, and you can read Jewish histories about this. It took place, guess where else? In Spain.
Yep.
In Spain.
The Visigoths were, I know when they set up their kingdoms and whatnot.
About opening the gates of Seville, opening the gates, you know. And in fact, in one of the critical battles in the Conquista of Spain, the original Moorish Conquista, there's a whole history of the fact of these Jews who led the passes over the mountains, right? To guide them in so they can conquest of Spain. I mean, it's all there. Now, this is what I hope we really delve into now on this on this program, to understand this. And not understanding this is the death knell of Europe. If you don't understand the fact that the minds, the spirit, the hearts of Europe have been conquered already, that you've got to restore that by deposing the Jews, creating our own media. But really, every time we open our mouth about the invasion of Europe with the tribalists, there will be no effective resistance of this in government, in media, in psychology. We are not going to win the hearts and minds of our people unless we begin to get into their soul and sinew, the marrow of their bones, who's behind this. And a lot of people are so deluded by all this. For instance, I'll give an example. And I'm sorry if I'm going on and on, because I want a good exchange between us, because you have about as much knowledge on this as I do.
Maybe not quite, but yeah. No, we want to hear what you have to say, David, so please go ahead.
Well, let's just go into it just a little bit. The common argument that you hear, and by the way, one of the real principles of the Jewish supremacist conquest of us is a divide and conquer scenario. That's what George Orwell talks about in 1984. And by the way, in Big Brother, it's real interesting that the opposition to Big Brother, that Orwell names him as Goldstein, Emmanuel Goldstein.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, Orwell was involved in, for instance, the later conquista of Spain, which was the revolution in Spain, right? In the 1930s,
yep.
Which the Germans were on the right side of and the West was on the wrong side of. But, and this was led, the chief guy that was running this whole Spanish revolutionary movement, the Republicans, who were just nothing but communists, really, was Rosenberg from the Soviet Union, who was the Russian ambassador. And everybody, you can read Jewish learning, you go to the websites, and they talk about the fact that these people who were murdering tens of thousands of priests and nuns, they were literally digging up Christian martyrs from around the churches of Spain, digging up the corpses and standing them against the, I mean, talk about evil. I mean, there's no way to explain this, the rape of these nuns, the destruction of Spain. Again, it was, again, an ethnic thing. And in fact, the leading Abraham Lincoln brigades, for instance, from America, has even talked about how they spoke Yiddish and they were Jewish. And the Jewish media, the Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, did a movie called For Whom the Bells Toll, or Whom the Bells Toll, which was, of course, the famous novel by the Marxist, by the way, guy. But the movie was basically portraying the Republicans of Spain, for the stupid American listeners and European listeners, that the Republicans were like American Republicans, you see? These people who were killing all the nuns and killing the priests and committing these mass murders and this horrific, you know, trying to install a Bolshevik revolution in Spain, as they did in Russia, that these are just simply Republicans. I mean, that's the movies. That's what you saw all during the 30s when these Bolshevik Jews were killing tens of millions of Europeans. There was not a single movie made about the greatest Holocaust. There was no movies made about the Holodomor.
No.
Where 8 million Christian, eight million Ukrainians were massacred. That's why the Ukrainians hate the Russians, but it really wasn't the Russians. The Russians themselves are being murdered by these people. This is what's going on in Europe right now. It's the same thing that went on in the Soviet Revolution, same thing that went on in Spain. Well, anyway, so Orwell knew about the Jews. He felt like he couldn't say it, and that's one of the biggest problems. He tried to tell us that, I think, in the controlled opposition, being Emmanuel Goldstein, two Jewish, you know, identified names as the controlled opposition. But Emmanuel Goldstein was essentially part of Big Brother. And they're going to control, and just like in America, they control the Republican Party, which is now talking against immigration. Ronald Reagan did the same thing back in the 1980s, right? But Ronald Reagan didn't, you know, he said he got elected on no amnesty and no immigration and no affirmative action and neighborhood schools and all the things for the European people. But in fact, he did the first amnesty in Europe because they know that as long as they can control the opposition, unless we make people understand and really fully understand that the media is in the hands of our enemies, unless they do that, we cannot successfully ever free ourselves in Europe. I am encouraged, though, because these Jewish extremists, they literally don't know when to stop. They have this chutzpah, and Europe is still about, you know, demographically still probably overall Europe. If you take Eastern Europe too, it's probably over 90% European,
sure,
still,
yeah,
in Europe.
Yeah.
And I think that the fact that they're supporting this recent mass invasion of Europe may be a strategic mistake for them, because we still have the time to wake up and cleanse our lands if we do wake up. And I think this massive invasion right now may lead to that. But it's only going to lead to that unless we begin to identify the real enemy that's caused this invasion, that promotes this invasion, and promotes the absolute moral poison of our people that's preventing us from having a successful resistance.
Yeah, there's this like kind of spell, you're getting old, you're dying, you know, all this kind of stuff that's going on as a psychological operation on top of it. But I want to pick up and talk more about this in the second segment. We have so much more to talk about. I want to ask you about, obviously, where this is going to end and of course, how we help to stop it and what's going to happen if we don't. I also want to ask you a little bit more about Ann Coulter and
Can we talk
Donald
a little
Trump?
More on this one? I know it's hard to do it, but I really want to go before we do the second segment.
Mm-hmm.
I really want to talk about this reality that, see, the average European is constantly being told now, again, it's controlled opposition, that this whole idea that, you know, that the Jewish power, the Zionist power, the globalist power is the cause of this is wrong, they say, because it doesn't make any sense. Because why would the Jews promote, you know, a lot of anti-Israeli, anti-Zionist, and anti-Jewish immigrants into the European world? And that is something you hear every day. And, you know, that may sound rational to the average person listening to it, okay? Because it doesn't seem to make any sense. But you have to understand, folks, all you people listening have to understand something. That may sound rational to you, but our enemy is not rational. They're insane. Our enemies are totally driven. The Zionist Jewish extremist supremacists, they are driven by a deep and abiding hatred of the European people. And the fact is, you can think, well, maybe it doesn't sound logical, but it doesn't have to sound logical. It is fact. And we talked about some of that data earlier, but we need to go into it a little bit here. I'll just give you a couple of examples, if we could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. Go ahead.
So they understand what's going on here, okay? We already talked about Wesley Clark. All right, let's talk about what was written 20 years ago by one of the leading Jewish think tanks in America, which was the Perlmutter Institute, by Earl Rabb, executive director of the Jewish Community Relations Council. Now listen to what he says about immigration in America. And I'll quote him. The Census Bureau has just reported that about half of the American population will soon be non-white or non-European, and they will all be American citizens. We have tipped beyond the point where a Nazi Aryan party will be able to prevail in this country. We, the Jews, of course, have been nourishing the American climate of opposition to ethnic bigotry for about half a century. That climate has not yet been perfected, but the heterogeneous nature of our population tends to make it irreversible. So
yeah.
This, now we can just go on and on. There's a very good quote from a good example is here's a Jew editor of the Australian Jewish Democrat. This is Australia, so it's all over the world. She says, quote, the strengthening of multicultural or diverse Australia is also our most effective insurance policy against anti-Semitism. the day Australia has a Chinese Australian Governor General, I would be more confident of my freedom to live as a Jewish Australian. I mean, we just quoted Wesley Clark at a NATO. We can go on and on. We can go to a perfect example is Barbara Lerner, Spectra. Now, this is a woman who made Aliyah in Israel, who supports Israel as a Jewish state. I have her in one of my videos, which I urge all of you to watch. It's called How Zionism Divides and Conquers, right? And yep. You can see her on video saying this. This is purely authentic video. Now, she goes Aliyah to Israel, and then for some reason, this Jew feels compelled to go to Sweden. What relationship she has to Sweden is there's no relationship. No. She just part of the Jewish shock force that is determined to destroy Europe because they feel the European stands between them truly, that the European, if the European get a hold of themselves, it's the one thing that can prevent really their Jewish domination of the world. Anyway, this is what she says. And she's taped. I mean, you can see this in video. And this was done, by the way, by an Israeli news service for Israeli consumption, not for our consumption. Quote, this is Barbara Spector, founder of Paideia in Sweden. Quote, I think there's a resurgence of anti-Semitism because at this point in time, Europe has not yet learned how to be multicultural. And I think we're going to be part of the throes of that transformation, which must take place. Europe is not going to be the monolithic societies they once were in the last century. Jews are going to be at the center of that. It's a huge transformation for Europe to make. They are now going into a multicultural mode. And listen to this line, folks. And Jews will be resented because of our leading role. I'll quote one more Jew so people understand some of this. These are Western countries, they're Eastern European countries all over the world. Here's an amazing quote, but you can document the quote. This is from Ishmael Levitz, all right, a Jewish rabbi. He says, it is in the Jewish interest, it is in humanity's interest that whites experience a genocide until white children are burned alive, white women raped, mutilated, murdered, and all white men who have not been slaughtered watch powerlessly as their people are terrorized. Only then will mankind be in a more equal footing, ready to discuss white privilege and the apparent chip on the shoulder that minorities have. Now, he wasn't saying there that all white children should be burned alive, that all white women should be raped or mutilated, but he's saying that as long as this does not happen and white men have to watch perilously that this happens, only then will mankind be in equal footing. In other words, these crimes have to be committed, and only then will people be ready to address white privilege and the apparent chip on the shoulder. And I got to give you one more quote, even though I know we're going a little over time, that's got to be quoted, and that's a guy named, the very interesting guy, Ignatius, at Harvard University, a Jewish professor, who calls for, quote, the abolition of the white race.
Yep.
I mean, it's amazing they do this. Now, he's at Harvard. Jews, 20% of the population, have 25% of Harvard. Does he speak against this? Does he speak against this Jewish racism and discrimination where you 70% of the top performing students in America are European Americans, and yet they're only 20% of the most important university in America? Does he make his campaign? He says he's anti-Zionist, by the way, but does he launch his campaign to abolish Jews? No. He says the white race must be abolished and that race treason, you know, is essential, that we must be race traitors in America. I mean, this is the Jewish establishment, and there's no way to get around it and to say that it doesn't make any sense for them to be this way. Every major Jewish organization, in the United States of America, I'm talking about the 50 largest multi-billion dollar Jewish organizations, have been pushing for open borders and destruction of the white race in America. Every one of the Jewish establishment organizations in Europe, whether you're talking about Germany or France or Spain or Italy or Poland or Romania, for that matter, or Hungary or Slovenia or Russia, every major Jewish organization on the planet pushes for mass immigration and the destruction of the European people. So those of you who think that, well, it doesn't make any sense, so it can't be, that has nothing to do with the fact. The facts on the ground are that they are literally the architects of the genocide of the European people.
And, you know, let me just mention a couple more while we're on this before we take a break here. Gregory Gysi, you pointed this out, in Germany, head of the Left Party, basically in a video recently links all Germans to Nazis and then goes on to celebrate the demographic demise over the fact that Germans are not having any children. Annetta Kahane out of Germany, too, her quote, "You really have to change the policy of immigration inside Europe. This is very important. You have to adopt the education system." And then she goes on to say, I don't know, she speaks to RT and she probably just didn't know what to say. She says, "And adapt the self-understanding of the states." Don't know what that means. But anyway, she goes on to say, "There are not any more only white or only Swedish or only Portuguese or only German. They are multicultural places in the world." Irvin Kahn, president of the Jewish community in Oslo, and of course, deputy director at the Norwegian Center Against Racism. A couple of years ago now, I think, he said that Norway is too white and something has to be done about this, and they haven't learned. There's still bigots in Norway because it's all white people there largely. I mean, this goes on and on and on and on. And the only thing I want to point out to people here is, please think about the reaction in the media if we had European people in other countries talking about this, trying to destroy other ethnicities in whatever country they were in.
Imagine if we said we would celebrate the genocide or the wiping off the earth of Jewish people.
Exactly.
Or the wiping off the earth of African people. I mean, and by the way, what you say, and this is probably the most important thing, that what when you say, the good example is Gysi, and I've done some articles on that and had that video on my site, davidduke.com. But the real key to me is not the fact that this socialist communist Jew has said this. And it's not just the fact that, by the way, even Mr. Blumenthal, a Jewish anti-Zionist, but a very pro-Jewish tribalist, revealed the fact that Gysi tries to protect Israel, by the way, at the same time. And he has no problem with Israel being a Jewish state. But the interesting thing is, to show you the Jewish element here, how in the world can he get away with this? Why wouldn't the mainstream media in Germany condemn this?
Exactly, yes.
And why is it that Jews are allowed this extreme double standard? And the final thing maybe we should say about this, I just heard a very good speech, and it was a beautiful speech about pan-Europeanism. And I really believe that one of the things I said in a talk back in Russia a few years ago, that we can never go to war against each other, that we Europeans must certainly want to preserve our own unique nationalities and identities and languages in Europe. We're not like the EU, but at the same time, we have to develop a new brotherhood, a new support for all of our European brothers and sisters. If any one nation escapes this Jewish control, this, you know, starts to preserve its own people again, they must make sacrifices within that nation, actually, to support financially and spiritually all other European revolutionary movements. We are going to sink or swim together in this role. But it's really amazing to think about, and I think this is what you've got to understand here. If this Jewish power and this Jewish influence is not the critical thing, then why is it, when we can prove it, why is it the one thing that even our own revolutionaries, so many of them, are so reluctant to mention? In fact, the fact that we can't even talk about the Jewish role in the destruction of the white race and the hatred against the white race, the fact we can't even talk about it, or why so few are willing to talk about it, doesn't that tell every one of us that this is what we must talk about. In other words, folks who are listening, you know, the fact, you know, in this speech by an Eastern European talked about pan-Europeanism, in the whole talk, which is a very inspiring talk to me, we can't go to war against each other, we must save our heritage, save our families and our children, there's not one mention of the Zionist role, the Jewish role in all this. And if you can't say the word Jew, say Zio. It's a word people understand very quickly. In fact, in some cases, you can't get your videos on if you use the word Jew. Maybe you should use the word Zio, whatever you got to do to get the word out. But there always should be reference to this. If you just say the eternal enemy, like David Irving says, the fact that, you know, why in the world did this guy who's saying we need pan-Europeanism and preserving our people, that he doesn't dare talk about the Jews? Well, if you don't dare talk about the most powerful force behind this on a universal level, all over the world, in every European country, and then isn't that, Henrik, isn't this the thing that we must discuss the most? Because this is the one fact of life that's causing our genocide, is this power. Every time you open your mouth about immigration, to whoever you talk to, your friends, your family, whoever, always bring this into the discussion, that we have a Zio-controlled international media, a globalist media, that is poisoning our people, that is an ethnic supremacist media that is orchestrating our genocide. This needs to be there every day, every time you open your mouth. And the proof of it is the fact that so many of our people are afraid. These people have so much power. If they don't have the power that I say they do, and you say they do, then why are people so afraid to even mention it?
I would point out if these people were Muslims, and sometimes I do. I would point it out if they were only Swedish people talking about this, for Christ's sake. And sometimes I do as well. I call everyone out on this. But it's like this is an untouchable special class. And I mean, where does this come from with all the talk of equality and we're all the same and all this nonsense? That proves then that that's just hypocrisy. These are just double standards that, you know, you can't point out the obvious of what people are saying. I mean, and to point out this in itself is not the bigotry here, that don't shoot the messenger, folks, but this is what they're doing in the media instead of actually looking at what these people are saying. So look into these quotes for yourself and try to explain this to me or to anybody who questions this, and also understand not only why are they saying these things. I mean, these are not isolated instances. This is like the narrative and the message. But ask yourself, how are they getting away with it? That's the most important thing. But, you know, as the quote goes, to find out who rules over you, simply find out who you're not allowed to criticize, you know?
Voltaire didn't say that. Whoever said it, it's so true. And this is the one overwhelming fact of why our people face genocide on a global basis today. And the fact that we can't talk about it. And by the way, let's make it real clear, and it's very important we do this. You know, we're not saying that every Jew is a part of it. Some Jews actually are exposing Jewish tribalism. So, you know, and that's the only Jews that I really basically tolerate. I don't tolerate Jews that simply talk against Zionism. I tolerate Jews that expose the fact that Zionism has the power is because of their tribalist nature, their racial supremacist nature. But not every Jew is doing this. But the fact is, and you can go to any country of Europe, any country of the Western world, either Eastern or Western Europe, and you will find that every major Jewish establishment organization is pushing absolutely for the genocide of the European people. And if you start to look then at their power in media, and you start to look in their power of banking, they're the Soroses of the world, you start to look in the power like they have in the Federal Reserve, you look in their power in academia, this is the one common denominator of our extinction. The reason we're being conquered today by non-European immigration is because we've already been conquered by tyrants who are now orchestrating our own genocide. And until we fight that and free our minds and free our spirit and free our basic, the marrow of our bones understand this problem, until that happens, we are not going to be able to save our people. Our liberation from the Jewish tyrants and supremacists is the absolute key to real answers. And the reason for that is, and we talked about this before this program, I'll just say one last thing because I know we're out of time now, but the reason for this, by the way, is because as long as they control the threat of media, as long as they control the threat of financing, they can simply lead the opposition to defeat. And they're the reasons why Europe is not making the moves, even in our parties, that we've got to make to save our people. Until we understand that overthrowing the Jewish overlay, the power structure in Europe, in media, in government, in finance, right, in politics, until we understand that, we are not going to be able to save our people. So this has got to be, I believe, job number one of people who really want to save the European people.
All right, before we take a break here and pick up the conversation in the second hour, as I said, much more to ask you about. Please give us the website where people can go to find out more. Please give us some of your book titles. Tell us about some of your videos. And yeah, the floor is yours, David, here in the last couple of minutes before we break.
I just heard from friends in Poland that they now have a Polish edition of my book, My Awakening. I think it's Jewish Supremacism part of it. All over the world, here are my main books. It's called My Awakening, which has a long section on, it's done in the form of a biography, which is, I think, interesting and makes it a very good read. But it has a huge section on racial understanding and realities. It's got a large section on the Jewish question, and it's got a large section on how we fight this issue, how we restore our homelands. It's called My Awakening. We also have Jewish Supremacism, which deals just on the Jewish element. And that's probably a good book to give to people who are not yet racially aware, but who can come to the understanding of the crisis of Europe by understanding the Jewish question. The destruction of Europe is simply, and the destruction of our race is simply part of the Jewish plan for Jewish domination. And then I also wrote a book, which I think is critical. It's called The Secret Behind Communism, which shows the overwhelming Jewish tribal role behind communism. And it talks about the greatest in Holocaust in the history of the world, which was a Jewish Holocaust against European peoples. And it also goes somewhat into the Second World War and how that also was a huge Holocaust of Europe, which was orchestrated by that same element, including a lot of communists and a lot of Zionists. But communism, Zionism, it makes no difference, folks. It's all part of the same Jewish supremacism.
All right. DavidDuke.com is the website. We'll have links up on ours and, of course, to the YouTube channel and to many of the books that he has available as well. All right. We'll play a tune right here. And please do join us in the second hour for much more of our conversation with David Duke. I want to hear more about what he has to say. We'll be right back. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we will continue as we do in the second hour at redicemembers.com. We do not have any commercial interruptions in our program and no ads on the website. You can hear us three times per week, and this includes Radio 314. We also produce videos. We'd like to do a whole lot more of them. And we also have a busy news section. So if you want to hear more and get access to our full archives with over 1,000 programs and growing every other day, both hours of all the shows, go to redicemembers.com and sign up for a membership. It's only €5 per month. We have subscriptions from 3 months, 6 months, or 9 months, and all the way up to 1 or 2 years, whatever works for you. We also have subscriptions that are recurring every 3 months. You can help us grow and expand in our coverage. Please do consider becoming a member. We have much more to discuss with Dr. David Duke, so don't miss it as we go deeper into what lies underneath the problems that we face both in Europe and America. We have much more to go into, and we have another hour and a half of analysis and discussion about what is happening. We have more coming, of course, on the radio show with Andrew Arnheimer, Tan Staffel, and many more after this. You can see the full list of our upcoming guests in the radio archives on our websites. Thank you so much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. We'll speak to you after the break. Thank you for staying with us.